What's going on, Eagles fans? Welcome in to the Locked On Eagles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day. It's Louis DiBiase, as always, alongside my co-host Gino Camilleri on this Thursday edition of the show. A couple days in now to the chaos of NFL free agency. It officially opened up yesterday, but as we saw from the flurry of trades on Tuesday and the big Eagles moves on Monday, bringing in Malik Jackson and DeSean Jackson, it's been a pretty eventful 3 days in the offseason, Gino. There has been so much star movement. I was saying this in the podcast yesterday that it's almost like the NBA where, you know, you're seeing DeSean in Philly now, Antonio Brown in Oakland, Odell Beckham Jr. in Cleveland. I mean, there's just Le'Veon's in New York. It's crazy. It feels like a different league where you're just seeing so much star power change teams, and that just normally never happens.
I think you're starting to see a bigger disparagement between the top GMs in the league and the guys that have no idea what are going on. Cough, cough, Dave Gettleman. But there are teams, much like the Philadelphia Eagles and John Dorsey's Browns, which are starting to bring in positions of value without giving up heavy cap assets. You look at what the Browns gave up for Odell Beckham. They still have, I think they have 9 picks this year. I know they still have a second round pick. They have multiple third and fourth round picks. They're still in good position. And look at the Eagles. They're signing value free agents. They're addressing positions of need. You got Malik Jackson, $10 million isn't a huge number. He doesn't count against the comp pick formula. Oh, breaking news. Jordan Matthews is signing with the 49ers. Oh,
really?
I was not expecting that.
We've had two breaking news alerts this week. The one was the bigger one with DeSean, but
yeah,
Jordan Matthews in San Fran, huh?
Yeah, that's a good move for him. They need some help there. They lost Pierre Garçon. You still have Goodwin there. That's a good combo. He'll be a
Dante
good complementary.
Dante Pettis, too, I think, in his second year. Dante Pettis should be pretty good in his second year. That's a solid trio for Shanahan with Tevin Coleman as well. And we'll get into running backs a little bit later on, too, Gino. But real quick, like going back to what you said, too, you're right. You see Howie Roseman and how he's taking advantage of young players that have proven to be studs on the field that fall out of favor for different reasons. And for the Giants with Odell Beckham, seemingly, it was because Dave Gettleman thought he was a quote-unquote distraction. And Cleveland took advantage of that. Truthfully, I think the Browns are the closest thing you might see to the 2017 Eagles, right? Where there's this 7-9 team that could take a next step with a second-year quarterback, and then they take this monstrous leap. That, I don't know. I don't want to jump the gun, but with Philadelphia, we kind of were patient, and they did jump the gun themselves. So Cleveland seems like the candidate to do that next year if there's going to be anybody that does it.
The thing is, these teams realize they follow the Philadelphia Eagles formula. They're not the first team ever to do it, but they're the team that has done it most successfully in recent memories. You have a quarterback on a rookie contract. That is the greatest asset you will ever have in the NFL. That window lasts 4, maybe 5 years, depending on when you extend your quarterback. You saw Philly in 2016 going into 2017. They brought in pass-catching options. They bulked up their defense. You look to the next year. Who is the team that did that? The Chicago Bears.
That's
they
right.
Bring in Khalil Mack. They bring in Taylor Gabriel. They bring in Allen Robinson, all these weapons for the Bears. Now you look at this offseason, and I could see there's two teams, one more successful than the other doing this. I'd say the least successful one right now is the Jets. They're still surrounding Darnold with some weapons. They brought in some lower option wideouts. Still are going to give him better pass options than he had. They're bulking up their defense. They attempted to get Anthony Barr, couldn't get him, but they get CJ Mosley. They still have Jamal Adams in the back. They're taking advantage of that, and that's what you have to do. And that's the formula to win in this league. But making sure history doesn't repeat itself, you take a page out of the Seattle Seahawks book and make sure you follow the formula to not overpay at many positions and make sure you have enough draft capital to supplement those positions that you're going to have to lose.
Good point,
and the Eagles
yeah.
are doing it the right way this time around.
Yeah, I'm with you. That's a good point. And a team that I can't figure out what they're doing, certainly not doing it the right way, is the New York Giants. So this is a team, Gino, that, and me and you have kind of, we've made fun of the NFC East throughout the offseason. It's just in our blood. It's hard for us to contain ourselves when they're trading for Case Keenum and, you know, getting rid of all their pass rushers in Dallas. The Giants, seemingly last year, take Saquon Barkley second overall, They don't take a Sam Darnold. They don't take a Josh Allen because they're in quote-unquote win-now mode. It's why they still dragged across the carcass of what was Eli Manning for a fifth year since he's really been shot. I feel like for 5 years at the minimum, right? But they try to justify like they're winning now. And then this year, they trade away Odell Beckham, right? And they're collecting another first and a third, seemingly to rebuild, although I think it's kind of counterproductive to get rid of a young generational receiver that's going to help your rookie quarterback, and you still drag along your 38-year-old terrible quarterback. And then today, about an hour before we started recording, Golden Tate signed with the New York Giants 4 years, $37 million, 23 of which is guaranteed. This is good for the Eagles. They get a fourth-round compensatory pick in 2020, basically only moving down one round for Golden Tate, getting a game-winning touchdown in the playoffs. Brilliant trade now, it seems. But what is Golden Tate doing? And what are the Giants doing? You're not rebuilding with a 31-year-old receiver and a 38-year-old quarterback. I mean, I guess it's going to be great for their two-yard slant routes, but I don't get it, Gino.
Yeah, frankly, I don't understand what the Giants are doing at all, but to be honest, I'm kind of happy about it. I mean,
oh yeah, four easy wins for us this year with Washington too.
Like I was saying when I started this segment, saying that there's a larger disparity between the top GMs and the lower tier GMs. You look right now at the Miami Dolphins; they are just don't have any path right now. You look at the Washington Redskins; their moves are very questionable at the moment. Cincinnati Bengals, the same things. There's starting to be a bigger gap between these teams, and you either have to evolve or die. You look back at the Buffalo Bills. Over the past 20 years, they've really struggled to figure it out. Within the last two seasons, as much as I'm not a fan of Buffalo, hats off to them for the moves that they've made within the past year and a half. You go out and finally get the quarterback that you think is going to be the guy. I'm still not super high on Josh Allen. You bring in some weapons for him. They signed Tyler Croft from the Bengals. You have Robert Foster. You bring in John Brown, who I love. You bring in Cole Beasley, and you follow that formula that has worked for so many other teams. The NFL is a copycat league. Teams saw the Eagles being successful off of getting their rookie quarterback in there and bringing in weapons for him. Look at the Rams with Jared Goff, same exact thing. That's the formula that you have to follow. And teams like the Giants are just clueless and have no formula at all, are doing moves that no team in their right mind should be doing. Golden Tate, I thought you wanted to win when you came to Philadelphia. I thought that was the sentiment you wanted to leave. And then you go to New York? I don't understand that at all. But the good thing is the strong survive. The Howie Rosemans of the world will prey on the weak. They will get assets for cheap, and they'll continue to grow. They'll continue to prosper by milking the comp pick formula. If everything goes right, the Eagles should end with four top third round and fourth round comp picks combined. That's exactly how you have to rebuild. Don't fall by the wayside like Seattle did and trade away all that capital. Kill your cap number. Have all this dead cap. Howie Roseman and that front office, you have to give it to the financial guys too. They are constructing these contracts and constructing these teams to win for multiple seasons. Not just this year, not just next year, but for multiple seasons. You look at the wide receiver position, we're investing upwards of $30 million right there. May seem a little crazy, but the thing is, they can do that right now, and you have that luxury. Should you draft Nelson Agholor's replacement this year? Probably, but I'm not going to take Nelson Agholor off the field when you now have DeSean Jackson and Alshon Jeffrey to compliment him. Bring him back to his 2017 self. Let Dallas Goedert go out there. Let Zach Ertz go out there. Spread the wealth around because you have the ability to field such a good team. And Adam Kaplan said the best quote. I'll keep quoting him. Good teams don't have much salary cap because you have to pay good players.
Right. Having a high payroll isn't a bad thing when you have good players. I mean, it's bad when you're paying, you know, $16 million in dead cap to get Odell Beckham off of your team. But, you know, going to the receiver thing real quick before we take a break and we get to our new receiver, DeSean Jackson, and takeaways from his press conference, that receiving position right now, first off, I'm never one to want to skimp on weapons after seeing the 2016 Philadelphia Eagles. Sure. If they had the weapons they had now, they would have been a playoff team. The other good thing is, too, they, again, like you said, they have that optionality. And maybe, too, they draft DeSean Jackson's replacement down the road, because in a couple years, you can really get out of that contract, hypothetically, when Wentz gets his contract extension, and then you pair a 27-year-old Nelson Agholor maybe with an outside guy. So you have this optionality, too, because of a lot of your other important positions, those contracts are backloaded. So you have the upfront cap space to give your wide receivers, and then eventually those move on, or maybe you give Agholor an extension that his contract is backloaded when the other contracts have their cap hit up. So I think it's a sustainable strategy to kind of do what Howie's doing with the, you know, balancing high cap hits now and backloading a lot of contracts, as long as it's players that you think are going to be, you know, really good for another however long the contract is. And we're going to talk to Zach Moore next week of Over the Cap. Supposed to get him on this week, but we wanted to wait out the offseason chaos to kind of recap it.
Right.
And so we'll talk to him about kind of the blueprint, and talk about if this Howie Roseman cap strategy is sustainable. But it looks like it has been since he's come back in that 2016 season to head up the personnel department. Let's take a quick break here on the Lockdown Eagles podcast. When Gino and I come back, we'll get into DeSean Jackson's press conference. I thought there was a lot of interesting things that he said. I thought it was a really good start for DeSean, outside of being 15 minutes late to the press conference. This is the Lockdown Eagles podcast. All right, everybody, welcome back to Lockdown Eagles. Louis DiBiase, Gito Camilleri. As always, make sure you follow our Twitter accounts at Lockdown Birds, at DiBiase LOE, and Gino's is Gino _LOE. So DeSean Jackson met with the media today for the first time since being reunited with the Philadelphia Eagles. And I don't know about you, Gino, but I thought it was a really good step. I thought he showed a lot of maturity. I thought he seemed, you know, there's some people that are concerned about, no one's really concerned about his on-the-field impact, but I think some were kind of hesitant because of the character concerns that he had in his first stint and some, you know, speculation with what happened in Tampa Bay. But, man, he talked about being more accountable, saying how he had the world in his hands when he first got in the league, talked about his family, and I love the one quote where he said he had an old quote when he was with his first stint in Philadelphia, how cheetahs don't run, right? Where he could just wake up and just run a 4.3.
Yeah,
cheetahs don't stretch. Yeah, exactly. And whereas now he's got to put in the work. And I don't know, he was even talking about how he realized that this team has so many weapons and that last time he was a wide receiver one, whereas now he might be the fifth option. Saying, I like the one quote where sometimes I might have games where there's zero catches, might have games where I get a ton, and he seemed like he was okay with that. I thought there was a lot of good signs. I thought he showed a lot of maturity today. I was very encouraged. I think it was a good start.
Absolutely. I think we said it time and time again that he had a story to fulfill in Philadelphia, and I'm sure glad that he's back here. And I remember exactly where I was the day he got drafted. I was sitting in my father's restaurant in the back office, and I remember seeing DeSean with all his buddies sitting in his house. He's got his gold chains on. He's got his nice fancy watches and everything, and that's the thing they said. They said character concerns. The guy I saw today was not the same person we saw 10 years ago.
Yeah,
and I think that is one of the greatest things that could happen to this team, because he's going to come in here and absolutely pour his heart out into the city of Philadelphia. You heard him when he was talking about the Super Bowl, and you knew he was watching it, and you knew he was a little upset that he wasn't on the team. And God darn, Chip Kelly had to get rid of him, but I'm glad everything came full circle, and he is back now. And I love the quote he said, that cheetahs didn't stretch, but now he has to take care of his body. And he says he knows that he's not going to bulk up in the weight room, but he'll train like an Olympic sprinter. And that's what they need him for. They need him to get down the field. They need him to be the most elite deep threat in NFL history for at least two more years. And you said it best. If you want to draft his replacement, there's plenty of guys you can do that in these later rounds. And I think now would be the best time than ever to get a guy like that in here to train behind him. We talk about the safety position and how we want an heir apparent at that position, bring a guy in to train behind Malcolm Jenkins and Rodney McLeod at the moment. Do that for the wide receiver room as well. I mean, Elshon, as good as he is, he's not going to be around forever. That's just the reality.
Yeah, he's already, 29? He's going to be 30 soon, so yeah, you're right.
Yeah, and his style of play, if he loses a little bit of speed, he can't continue to separate. That'll cause issues. But for right now, still one of the top 15 receivers in football. You look at DeSean Jackson, he's 32. He's not going to be around forever himself. Nelson Agholor with his contract situation, you don't know if he's going to come back. I think that wide receiver is a bigger need going into this draft than many people look at it. I love the sentiment that you draft for 2 to 3 years down the road, and I think that is going to be a huge need 2 to 3 years down the road.
Yeah.
If you could double dip in the second round and get, say, like a Hakeem Butler, if he happens to fall to 53, or you say J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, and then you draft a Mecole Hardman in the later rounds, you now have a guy that plays just like Elshon and J.J. Arcega-Whiteside that you could pair on the outside with him as well, and you have a Mecole Hardman that could be a change-up to DeSean Jackson. I think there are so many options for this team where they're sitting right now that this offseason is going to be the biggest one for the Philadelphia Eagles to continue to stay relevant, to continue to supplement those needs that they're going to continue to lose over the next few seasons, and they have to continue to draft well.
Like you said, I mean, you've been really talking about it, future needs. And that's a good thing about having a DeSean Jackson is that it is now a position, while you're right, I think it's still something you need to get some youth in there for sure, 100%. Mm-hmm. Especially with Shelton Gibson not panning out the way we wanted, Mac Hollins reappearing on the planet to give DeSean Jackson number 10 back.
Yeah, right, we know he's alive now.
Yeah, so at least we know he still exists. But again, like those two haven't panned out yet. Still holding out hope maybe Mac Hollins becomes something. But yeah, so they could add another young guy. The good thing is having DeSean, again, buys you more time where we go with that, you know, the Geno strategy that you've been really harping on all offseason, and rightfully so, that, hey, now look, we don't really need a defensive tackle for 2019. We don't really need a deep threat now for 2019. Do we want to take a linebacker here? Do we want to take a safety or a left tackle? Whatever at this
point.
Yeah, it's awesome. But I, by the way, going back, I really liked what you said about DeSean talking about how he thought, you know, he kept mentioning the 2017 Super Bowl, and he said, you know, I want that jewelry on my finger. I sat back and watched them win. And then he quickly said, you know, I wasn't bitter about it. I was happy for them. But to me, like, he is so bitter about it because he kept talking about what they
should have been on that team.
He should have been on that team. And I think he really feels like he should have been on that team. And that's why I think it really is a good sign that he came back here, because he came back for the right reason. He came back to contend because now he wants to be a part of that Super Bowl run that they made. And while when he went to Washington, what was the reason? It was because he wanted to play the Eagles twice a year and stick it to Chip Kelly. It was personal. Then why'd he choose Tampa Bay? It was for the money. Now you're not seeing those reasons motivate him towards his next destination. It was really all about winning. So I thought that those were some great quotes about that. That 2017 Super Bowl, you could tell, even when he was on Undisputed about a week after, during the title parade, actually, and he was on with Skip Bayless and Shannon Sharp, you could see the look in his eyes, like the demeanor in which he was talking. He definitely thought he could have been a part of that. It was only, what, 3 years later?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And we said his story is yet to be fulfilled, and I still think it is. And now is the best time to do it, DeSean. Now is the best time to come in here, continue to play at that speed he plays at. And just, I mean, look what he did to us this year. He burned Jalen Mills on that first play. You look at the division right now. Who do the Giants have on the outside? Janoris Jenkins? He hasn't been relevant in two seasons. I mean, Josh Norman as well for the Redskins. You know he's going to want to get paid back against his old team. The Cowboys, that'll be the toughest test, but I think DeSean, he is an element that is going to absolutely wreak havoc on the NFC East, paired with what they already have and paired with what they're going to continue to gain through free agency and through the draft. I'm so excited that DeSean's back. His demeanor in that press conference, I was smiling from ear to ear the entire time he was talking. I just felt like I was in an alternate reality that he was back in Philadelphia. It just feels right that he's back. I feel like he's home, and I just can't wait to see Carson cock his arm back, toss one down the field. If Doug doesn't call that the opening play come week one, he's out of his mind.
The play action, deep pass, first play has got to happen. I would be –
absolutely.
Oh, man. I would cry.
One last thing on that. He kept saying how Doug Peterson was his boy. I genuinely think he loves Doug Peterson. I think Doug was somebody that he connected well the last time he was here, and they have a good bond. So that's just something that I think is another added element to why it's great to have him back, because they do have that connection, and he was with DeSean when he was drafted, and he was here that entire time. So they have that bond, and it's going to only continue to get better as they're in the offensive meeting rooms scheming up plays for DeSean.
Yeah, like you said, I mean, Doug Peterson, this is another high character guy, like a high personality, a bigger personality that Chip Kelly just didn't want to handle. And yet he's come in here and he loves our head coach. I mean, this is such a good thing. We talked about it. I think at the end of the season, there were some players that had free agents texting them how badly they wanted to play in Philadelphia because of the highly praised culture that surrounds it. And that's why you're seeing these reunions with Jordan Matthews, Nick Foles, and Deshaun, even though all three were team decisions to move on from them. I wrote about it on LockedOnEagles.com, how these reunions are basically, you know, another great demonstration of what this Eagles and Philadelphia culture has done for players. They want to be here. And another motivation for him too, like you mentioned, Carson Wentz. People want to play with him. I know, contrary to prior belief of this hit piece that went out and said basically that Carson Wentz was a locker room cancer, people actually gravitate towards Carson Wentz. It's why Alshon Jeffrey signed here. It's why Torrey Smith signed there. Wentz was a big motivation for a guy in DeSean Jackson who, I mean, Gino, how many guys has he played with, right? He started with McNabb, but then
He's never had a quarterback longer than 2 years.
Yeah, because Kevin Cobb and then Michael Vick for a couple years. He was getting throws from Vince Young at some times. Nick Foles.
RG3, Kirk Cousins.
Then Jameis Winston and Ryan Fitzpatrick. This guy's never had stability at the position. He said, really, even today, you couldn't get that chemistry with anyone. I think the best chemistry he got was with Michael Vick, because it was from 2010 to 2013 where they were able to really grow together, but nobody else he was able to do that with. And I think he will be able to do that with another guy that is very eager to win a Super Bowl, that was watching from the sidelines the Eagles win that Super Bowl in 2017 in Carson Wentz. Those are two guys that felt like they should have been on the field in Midnight Green hoisting that trophy with everybody, and they weren't, and that's only going to add fuel to the fire.
Definitely. And you look back when the Eagles traded Sam Bradford, and Zach Ertz, he said it best. He said he wanted consistency in his game because it just improves everybody around him. Look at the consistency from 2016 to 2017 to 2018 he had with Carson Wentz. He progressively got better. And if he continues to grow the rapport with Alshon Jeffrey, I think the game plan for Alshon last season kind of hindered their connection a little bit. I think it'll get back to form this time around. But that's the greatest thing, is that when you have a quarterback in there that you know you can trust to get you the ball, that you know is going to put the ball right where you are when you're running, near 20 miles an hour down the field, Deshaun is going to grow to trust him, and he's going to grow to trust Deshaun. Who could he trust down the field last season? Shelton Gibson, he hit one time. I mean, besides that, he really couldn't trust anybody.
It was just Aguilar a couple times he could get open in the slot. At the end of the season, really, is when he got better at it. But you're right, there was no and I don't know if a lot of it had to do with the back injury, but yeah, there's no one clearly that could get as consistently open as Deshaun that was on this roster last year.
Exactly, and I think it's only going to benefit both of them. I think Deshaun realistically should have around 1,000 yards, if you think about it. I know they don't get receivers nearing 1,000 yards a lot of the time outside of Zach Ertz this year, but I just expect this offense to get back to form like it was in 2017. You know he's a better deep threat than Torrey Smith was at any time during his 2017 year, so you have an increased connection with all the receivers, Zach Ertz, Alshon, Dallas Goedert's going to improve. This offense is going to go nowhere but up, and they're just missing one more element, and that's a consistent running back. And once they add that, I can't even imagine how explosive this offense is going to be.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think DeSean Jackson is a big part of that, and I think today maybe, while it's not over, you know, you never know what's going to happen in the 2019 season, but I think it should put to rest some of the concern that people have that he could come in here and kind of hurt the chemistry of the locker room. He even talked about wanting to help these young guys like a Nelson Aguilar, who was a teenager when DeSean Jackson started becoming this all-time great deep threat in Philadelphia. Aguilar was just a kid. You even see Aguilar tribute DeSean with the fallback in the end zone last year against Houston and the year before against Arizona. Aguilar, I'm sure, grew up admiring DeSean Jackson. I don't know what kid at that time didn't. He was one of the most electric, exciting players, and he mentioned today much like Donovan McNabb did for him and Brian Westbrook in 2008. He wants to do the same thing for other guys, so I thought that was another really good sign. Let's take one final break here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. When me and Gino come back, we'll get into the Eagles signing linebacker LJ Fort, formerly of the Pittsburgh Steelers. We'll get into how he fits into the defense and then wrap up with some running back talk as Duke Johnson has been officially put on the trade block by the Cleveland Browns. This is Locked On Eagles. All right, everybody, one segment to go here on this Thursday edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast. If you missed our free agency special yesterday, I went in on DeSean Jackson, a feature podcast, basically on Tuesday. Me and Gino touching on the Malik Jackson signing on Monday with the breaking news that DeSean was getting traded to Philadelphia. So you have me and Gino's fanboy reactions instantly as we found out that the news was broken. Really exciting stuff, so we hope you shared in that by listening to that pod. You can find them on any podcast platform. Just tell Alexa, just tell Siri to play the Locked On Eagles podcast. And of course, if you're on your desktop, on your computer, lockedoneagles.com, you can find every podcast as well as written content. So the Eagles also made another move today on the defensive side of the ball. They bring in former linebacker for the Pittsburgh Steelers, LJ Fort, to a 3-year deal, only $1.9 million guaranteed. I actually had LJ Fort as an offseason acquisition for the Eagles in the offseason simulation podcast. Gino, when you made your predictions as well, you had LJ Fort coming in. That is great value at only 1.9 guaranteed. Last year, he was the 19th overall linebacker graded by PFF.
Yeah, and we got the information on LJ Fort from our good friend Michael Kist. He was the first person about a month ago to point him out to us. And a lot of Eagles fans really wanted these high-profile linebackers, and that's just not what the Eagles do anymore. You have your high-profile guy, Nigel Bradham. He's going to be your defensive play caller. That's that. They're in sub-packages where they run two linebackers like 75% of the time. You don't need these high-profile linebackers. And LJ Fort has been praised by many, many people all throughout this move. John Ledyard of the Draft Network, he's a Steelers fan, and he had some high praise for him. I know Michael Kist was high on him. Jeff McClain of the Inquirer just came out, and Paul Domowicz just said he's a fast athletic linebacker that the Steelers use as a cover guy in their nickel and dime sub packages. He played 43.2% of the defensive snaps in the last 10 games. He never really got his shot, but the Eagles look for these linebackers to be good coverage linebackers. We say that time and time again. And he's a guy that you can bring in here and provide actual competition for Kamu. Who did they bring in last year from Denver? Why can't I think of his name at the linebacking position? Who they thought would be quite like an LJ Fort to replace a
I know exactly who you're talking about.
I've been trying to think of his name all day. I couldn't think of it. But that's the kind of role they want him to play. They want that sub packages role. I'm sure he'll get like 40 to 50% of the snaps, split them with Kamu, but you don't need to invest heavily in a position which is paid by Malcolm Jenkins.
Corey Nelson was the guy.
Corey Nelson, yes, exactly. Wanted him to be a low profile linebacker that they could bring in and play in these sub packages because he's athletic in space. That's where LJ Fort succeeds. You said today in PFF he graded out very well in coverage, and that's exactly what they want him to do because, frankly, he doesn't need to be the best linebacker in the world, even though he is a pretty solid tackler. Malcolm Jenkins is going to be down in the box a majority of the time as well. So you just need a guy in there that is going to play well in space, and LJ Fort is your guy.
Yeah, I don't think it's even fair, too, because I think he's a really good coverage linebacker, but the grade on him is a little bit lower because Pittsburgh uses linebackers on slot receivers, and I'll never understand why. They don't do the same thing as Philadelphia, where there's times that it's just Nigel Bradham as your linebacker, and Malcolm Jenkins is down in the box, and you have two other safeties on the field, and you have three corners. That really wasn't what Pittsburgh did, so I was watching some film from Fort today, and I went back, and he's covering Keenan Allen in the slot, and he actually, on that play, did a really good job breaking up the ball, but I don't think it's really fair to just go based on, again, this is why you can't box score a scout, because you got to look at the situation that Fort was in. I thought he really made the most of it. I think he's great at covering tight ends. Even if someone catches it, like, they are not slipping away. He's such a sound, solidified tackler. Great at shedding blocks. You know, he flies to the ball. He's a really good blitzer. He had three quarterback hits last year and a sack. I know that's not something Philadelphia really does, but it is an option if they want him. With Bradham, Kamu Grugier-Hill, LJ Fort now, and Nate Geary, with Leroy Reynolds also back, I'm not really concerned about linebacker. We've come a long way from not wanting to deal with Jamar Chaney and Brian Roll and Keenan Clayton, thinking like, oh man, we really need linebackers. It was at the time a necessity in trying to convince ourselves Casey Matthews was going to be a middle linebacker. But, you know, at the time it was something that was needed, you know, and even in 4-3s, you used three stand-up linebackers. Now you're not really running traditional base defenses that much outside of on clear, obvious running situations. So you end up not going, you know, you could have spent $9 million on Jordan Hicks, but instead you're going to save like $8 million, and I think you're going to be better for it because LJ Fort's not the same player, not the same athlete as Jordan Hicks, but I don't think the production, Gino, is going to go down all that much from what Hicks was giving you the past couple of years.
No, the thing is, Fort is going to be on the field too. I don't think he had any major injuries in his career, and he's a guy that you got to give him a chance, and that's what this Eagles team is going to have to do. They're going to have to address positions. They're not going to be able to shell out as much money, but they're going to have to identify the skill set which they value in those positions and get guys on cheaper contracts like an LJ Fort. He's a guy you're paying him, what would you say, 1.9 was
guaranteed,
his guaranteed money,
yeah, yep,
over the next 3 years. That's dirt cheap at a position that is just a sub position. So think about it in the running back system. Are you going to pay a two-down running back or a pass-catching running back the same as you can pay a three-down running back? Not at all. That's the same thing in the linebacking committee. Are you going to pay a guy who just succeeds in sub-packages the same as you would pay a three-down linebacker? Absolutely not. So LJ Four, I'm looking at, I just typed in LJ into my search and LJ Smith popped up. 6 degrees of separation, Philadelphia Eagles, but yeah, he's a guy, I loved what I've seen on film from him. He's a guy that was under the radar, and a lot of Eagles fans and beat writers are like, who the heck is this guy? But thank you, Michael Kiss, for pointing him out, because he's a guy that you and me both wanted to come into this situation. We didn't want to overpay for Jordan Hicks. We made that more than known to our listeners, and now they got a guy that I really think can make a positive impact, and they still have Camus, and I loved what I saw out of Camus.
That's huge in coverage.
Oh, yeah. You saw that one fourth down stop against the Falcons early in the season. These guys both have skill sets that complement each other. I'm very happy with the signing. Isn't a splash, but he's going to get the job done.
He also picked off Michael Vick twice.
His first career game, yeah.
Yeah, that 2012 Week 1 disaster, even though the Eagles won the game, it was the Redeem Team season that was even worse than the Dream Team. Ended up going 4-12.
Right.
But they ended up winning the game despite Michael Vick throwing, what, I think four interceptions, and Brandon Whedon threw five in his own right in his first game with the Browns. Probably the worst win I've ever seen as an Eagles fan. But yeah, LJ Fort picked off Michael Vick twice in that game as a rookie. Just a little fun trivia. So he's not a spring chicken, but you pair him up with Gruje Hill, who, like I said, a great coverage linebacker, which is why Hicks got paid so much, is because while he wasn't making the splash turnover plays he was his first couple of years, he still graded out as one of the best coverage linebackers in the NFL the past couple of years, and I don't think the Eagles are really losing that, considering they still have Nigel Bradham, you still have Gruje Hill, LJ Fort now comes in, Nate Geary is actually a former safety, so he's good in that right as well. I thought last year in little spurts, Geary was pretty solid in that as well. Really like the signing for a position that, once again, is starting to, I don't want to say be devalued in the league, but it's definitely starting to transform into basically just another couple safeties. So I think that's going to do it for today's edition. We're out of time. We're going to talk about running backs tomorrow because there's just so much to get into and can't really go any longer on today's episode. But Gino, some great stuff from both LJ Fort coming in today to Philadelphia, DeSean Jackson on the press conference, Golden Tate signing with New York. Another pretty good day for Eagles fans out there. So that's going to do it. I think that's a good way to wrap up today's edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day. Once again, if you can't find our shows on LockedOnEagles.com or on Twitter at LockedOnBirds, at DBSCLOE, or at Gino_LOE, just tell Siri, just tell Alexa to play the Locked On Eagles podcast. Please subscribe to the show if you're not already. Appreciate the rates. Appreciate the reviews from all our listeners from across the pond, from in the United States, anywhere around the world. Eagles fans spread out on this big blue marble. That's going to do it for me and Gino. Signing off, as always, thanks for downloading, thanks for listening, and let's go Birds.
Fly, Eagles, fly.